Welcome to the Coach's Edge podcast. I want to share some thoughts on the NCAA tournament. Make this quick, short and sweet, to the point, brought to you by coachesedge.coach. And this audio is on the dashboard for Spotify for podcasters. So we're trying this out and hopefully everything goes well. I think we're also on video, which I don't know the point of. If you want to watch me on video on Spotify, I'm not a big fan of watching other people podcast, but I guess that's an option on this thing. Anyhow, NCAA tournament, talk a little bit about March Madness, some overall thoughts and some takeaways for me as I continue to coach the game. And one of the big takeaways, we'll talk men's, we'll talk women's a little bit. But one of the big takeaways for me is there's more than one way to win. There's more than one way to do the right thing. To get the job done, I should say. So when you think about that, you look at all the different styles of play. And one thing I love about college basketball is that post play is still emphasized. It's still found to be successful. And I think that that's something that I'd like to see back at all levels, something I'd like to see more at the NBA level. You know, why has post play disappeared? I mean, you could say analytics, but I think if I had to say one thing, I just think the way that the game is officiated, it makes more sense to spread out and drive the ball because you can't really touch a driver going to the basket. Whereas when you see post play, even at the NBA, it's still very, very physical. So why wouldn't you, you know, face up, drive from the perimeter and draw easy fouls, get layups, get kickouts for threes compared to getting in a wrestling match in the post where the game is still very, very physical. And I love seeing that physicality, not only the perimeter, but obviously the post in the men's game, in the women's game. Obviously, people don't have a 7'4" center in Zach Edey or a 7'2" center in Klingham, and the depth that UConn has coming off the bench if they so choose to use it. I mean, you know, you look at this game, they only played one guy off the bench for over 10 minutes. Right? Diarra was the only other one. Big body, but he made, you know, 4 out of 6 from the field, 9 points. Nice production from him coming off the bench. Whereas, you know, you look at Purdue, I mean, they had much more guys that they played off the bench. They had 3 guys play over 10 minutes coming off the bench, and they got a combined 2 points from all of them. So it's kind of interesting because when you just watched the game, you felt like UConn had more depth when in fact Purdue was the one playing more players off the bench, but you felt like UConn had more depth because they got more production from their bench. And it really was about the others. The game plan from UConn, from Coach Hurley, was obviously to be able to take away the 3-point line, be able to take away the role players, and, you know, let their bigs do their best against Zach Edey. Did that work out? It worked out to perfection. Those guys can't guard Zach Edey, but it's funny to say, dude has 37 points, 15 for 25 from the field, you know, 10 rebounds. Obviously the most dominant player in college basketball this year, the most dominant player in the NCAA tournament. Yet the way that they were able to still throw 7'2", you know, you get another 7-footer coming off to play a few minutes against Edie, for them to be able to say, okay, yeah, you might score 37, but we're really not going to double you for the most part. We're going to take away the 3-point line. We're going to take away the shooters from, you know, a guy like Fletcher Lawyer who goes 0-for-5. I mean, that's not going to win you a national championship if he has a rough game. You know, Purdue shot 1-for-7 from the 3-point line. They haven't shot that few 3-point shots the entire season. So that, I mean, they needed a great game out of Edie, which you knew he was going to give you, combined with being able to shoot it well from their perimeter guys. And obviously I was rooting for Purdue because I'm a Midwest guy, right? Born and raised in Michigan, spent some time in Ohio, even spent a year in Indiana. Shout out to Richmond, Indiana for my time spent there. So I'm pulling for the Midwest. But so my heart was Purdue. My head was UConn, absolute juggernaut. first time since the Florida Gators that a team has gone back to back. And the one thing that I love about watching UConn is their style of play. I mean, this is a team that they've been there, done that. They won the national championship last year. They graduate three of their top six players. They graduated the most outstanding player in last year's run to the national title. But those guys come back. Like most teams don't, if they win a national championship, they don't even make it back to the Final Four, let alone repeat. I think some of that is, you know, I could say the pressure, but I think a lot of that is players have reached the mountaintop. And then it becomes, if they do return, it becomes a little bit more about, okay, what's their draft status going to look like? What's their individual play going to look like? And when you watch UConn play, that's the epitome of team basketball. They have multiple future NBA players on that roster that don't play like it. Does that make sense? Their ability to give the basketball up quick. The ball doesn't stick. And when you have future NBA players on your roster at the college level, the ball usually sticks. And that's usually a good idea because they're better than everybody else out on the court. But for UConn to have maybe three future players that are going to play at the NBA level, who knows, it could be even more, to be able to get rid of the ball quickly, to be able to cut hard, to be able to screen hard, to be that unselfish, especially after winning a national championship the year before, is something that we rarely ever see. And it was beautiful, beautiful basketball to watch. I love the contrasting styles. Even though UConn had a ton of size, really more size than anybody else in the country that they were able to throw at Purdue. Purdue is obviously playing through Edie. They run ball screens up top for Smith. And then they're hoping that their other players can be able to knock down a three, get an opportunistic drive to the basket. And then, you know, that's essentially like how their offense unfolds. Whereas if you look at UConn, what are you going to cover? I mean, they have so many different guys that on any given night could be their best player. And they're able to use multiple actions that are so variable, right? Whether it's handoffs, whether it's ball screens, whether it's pin downs, and being able to go from one action to the other action. And that's where Coach Murray, right, their assistant coach, who's I mean, he's from the articles I've been reading, is the offensive mastermind, right? Bill Murray's son, the comedian, the actor, his son is like some of the mastermind behind their offense is pretty cool to see as well. But anyway, they play a very different style. And for UConn to have that level of talent, the ball doesn't stick. They play team basketball. They really move it around and they can hurt you in a variety of ways from the inside, from the outside, from dribble drive, and from multiple guys. Combine that with their athleticism. You know, I mean, these have been for the most part the top two teams in the country for the entire year. And here they get matched up. UConn wins by 15 points. It was a game in the first half. And then UConn just pulled away, and there's really nothing that Purdue could do about it. In order for Purdue to win this game, like, they really needed to have a great three-point shooting night, and they weren't even getting three-point shots off, let alone knocking them down at a high percentage. And so when you see a team like UConn do that and play by so much into the team game, not just offensively, which I've talked about, but on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, if you watch that game, they were pushing those catches farther out than Purdue would normally catch the basketball, right? They were making Braden Smith off those ball screens. He's got to think about it when he gets into the mid-range. Should I pull this mid-range jump shot? A little bit off balance, tough shot. Do I try to get all the way to the rim, right? There was a couple times where it's like, do I pass? Do I take that shot? A guy like Klingham is actually big enough that he can somewhat help on the lob and the roll to Edie while still affect the shot for Smith on the dribble drive. Very, very difficult. And I mean, that's why they're the best team in the country. There's really not another team in the nation that is able to have, you know, that type of defense. But the buy-in is just what impressed me, right? To have players that are that talented and buy in. I mean, the game was essentially like in hand. They're flying around, they're diving for loose balls. I mean, their heart and soul was in that game. Very well coached team. And so that was very cool to see. So props to UConn for winning it all. My only complaint, and this isn't a complaint for UConn, this isn't a complaint for any specific, this is a general thing that I observe, is just the amount of complaining that players do to the officials. It just keeps getting worse. And man, do I hate that. And this is like, I see more of this at the high school level. See, certainly if you go to AAU, it's awful. There's like no regulation there. And then if an official tries to like put their foot down and give somebody a technical, then it escalates and get even worse, it seems like. Right. So where does this come from? Where do we have to like make a stop? I think it's as parents. Like why are we complaining so much? I mean, this used to be like something that we'd see at the NBA level, but it really wasn't, you know, anywhere else. Now it's prevalent everywhere. You can go to a youth basketball game and see a third grader get called for a foul and throw their hands up and flip their jersey out and be complaining to a ref. I mean, this is, to me, this parenting, you know, like we have to do a better job of teaching our children at a young age to be respectful. The official isn't even going to remember you, chances are, or that game that they officiated by tomorrow. Right. They're reffing a million games. They're doing it because they're giving back to the sport. We don't have enough officials in the game. Don't give them a hard time. Be respectful. Keep playing. That's my soapbox for today. Women's game. Let me say it was so cool for my daughter who's in third grade. And one night I even let her stay up really late, because I think Iowa was the late game. It says, all right, you know, you're going to be able to stay up and watch the game. She was so excited to watch the game, and she's locked in and she's like, Dad, you know, what team are we rooting for? And then she's, you know, as she watches, she kind of figures out who she likes and things like that on her own. Although like you're just a hater if you don't watch Caitlin Clark and you're like, I don't like how she plays. What do you mean? I mean, she can dribble, she can pass, she can shoot. She plays the game like, nobody else has before. You know, the only comparison I have for Caitlin Clark is Steph Curry, like somebody who handles the ball at that level, uses the ball screen at a high level, has an extended shooting range, but also does a ton of work off ball. You know, Steph Curry runs off a million screens. Caitlin Clark also runs off a million screens. I mean, she gets a layup every game off of a backdoor cut. We don't see that from, big time ball handlers, big time scorers. They're on ball dominant. And when the ball's not in their hands, they usually tend to stand around. That's why Caitlin Clark reminds me so much of Curry, because of her movement off the ball. You know, that's like a difference between like a Curry and a Caitlin Clark compared to like a Trae Young. Trae Young bombs away from deep. Damian Lillard, another example, bombs away from deep. Can really handle the basketball. But when the ball's not in their hands, are they still cutting? Are they still setting screens? Are they working to get open without the basketball? Caitlin Clark and Steph Curry do that, which is one of the reasons why I think that they're so entertaining to watch. And a lot of times just kind of like they catch your eye, almost easier to root for, because they're just so active with and without the basketball. And that's honestly like, isn't that, you know, what we should be teaching our youth as they come up? Right, is to not just get to work when you have the basketball in your hands. Most of the time, it's not going to be in your hands. How can you be effective screening and cutting and spacing the floor when the ball is not in your hands? Those things are huge. So great to see, you know, her make a run again, going to the NCAA championship. It was interesting. I was hearing a lot of people feel, oh man, it's too bad, you know, Caitlin Clark didn't see it. I was like, she didn't need a win. A national championship to solidify her legacy. I think South Carolina was easily the best team in the nation, and it was not going to be anybody that was going to stop South Carolina. I mean, their bench team would be, you know, a top 25 team in the nation, in my opinion. So good. Similar to UConn in the sense, like they get after it offensively and defensively. They have star players that don't necessarily play like stars. They buy into the system. And this is one of the reasons why I felt like on the men's and the women's side, watching basketball, I was so engaged in the NCAA tournament this year. And I'm always excited for March Madness. I always watch a ton of the games. But to see the top dog in South Carolina, the top dog in UConn, and many other teams, but like the buy-in at college basketball to play team basketball and also like get after it and extend and do everything you can on the defensive end was really, really great to see. And I hope a lot of our younger players that watch just got a better feel, men's and women's, for the level of energy, for the level of work, for the level of effort that it takes to do something at a really, really high level. And that was very exciting for me to see, and refreshing for me to see, just the amount of work and effort and the dog that all of those players have if you're going to compete at that level. And then, yeah, and it was kind of interesting to see, okay, LSU beats Iowa last year. Iowa beats LSU this year. Iowa beat South Carolina last year. South Carolina beats Iowa this year. So obviously those revenge essential factors in both of those games was great for the ratings. And, you know, if you think about it, those were probably the top three teams in the country the entire season. And then, you know, that fourth team was UConn, and what UConn was able to do with their injuries was insane. I mean, is there another team that could lose? I mean, maybe South Carolina lose that many of their best players and still make it all the way to the Final Four. South Carolina probably could have done that, but as maybe the only other one. So it was just pretty cool. And like Gino Auriemma, love him or hate him, that's a dang good coach, right? And it was cool to see Paige Bueckers, you know, back into the limelight, back into the spotlight after so many years of injuries. And I apologize, I called her Bueckers. I just see, as much as I know her name, I see the U in the back of her name, and that's just what comes out. But Paige Bueckers was in that Final Four game. I would have loved to see her have the ball a little bit more, trying to create and make some plays, because Iowa just like chased her around so hard. There were just 5-minute stretches here and there where it was like they just took her out of the game and she disappeared. So, but just really, really cool. And I hope she comes back to college basketball for another year and gets a good full season of health and just really does her thing. I think the other reason I get caught up in March Madness is I'm always reflecting on my own college career. And this is funny. So like, this is personal. If you have, like, you ever dream about things that you've done in the past? And I dream a lot about playing basketball, but I'm almost always playing college basketball when I'm dreaming. Almost every single dream I have playing ball is not from playing in Europe. It's not from playing in high school. It's playing college basketball. And I'm always wondering, like, why is that? Why is that? Why is that? And I've come to this in my own psychotherapy as I think about this. In high school, my career finished. We lost. We won our district. We won a regional. We won a league championship. We were Division III, and we lost to the top-ranked team in the state, all classes. It was Detroit St. Martin de Porres, private school in Detroit. We were a rural public school. We played in the regionals. We beat Reese, who was they won the Saginaw district, which was super tough because Buena Vista out of Saginaw would a lot of times won the state championship at that time. They had beaten them in the district championship. We beat them in the regional championship. And the game before that, we'd beaten a team out of Detroit. It was a really, really good team out of Detroit. So it was a big deal for us to win a regional championship. That didn't happen in our school history very often. We go to play the top-ranked team in the state. You know, Brandon Cotton was a McDonald's All-American. They had other Division I players on their team. And we actually had a 2-point lead in the third quarter. And then they went on a run, and nothing we could do about it. I felt like, as much as it sucked to lose, there was like closure to losing to a team that I was like, you know what? Like, they're just flat out better. They were better than us. So I can be upset that we lost, but if that's the team that's going to win a state championship, which they did, and for the most part, they beat everyone pretty easily that whole run, you know, what am I going to do? You know, there's not a whole lot of regret that was involved in high school. Overseas, see, I played Division III basketball, and I think if I didn't go play overseas, there may have been some regret for that choice, playing Division III, because when you have scholarships at NAIA, scholarship at Division II, when you get a couple of Division I schools to give you a preferred walk-on opportunity, and, you know, just me hearing that, I'd be like, it might not be a scholarship my freshman year, but I trust my work ethic. I trust my work ethic and the fact that, like, I didn't really play AAU, and I was just like, I was as good as I was just from playing a bunch in my driveway. I was like, you put me in there and we'll work and we'll see what's going to happen. So I trusted that process, but I wanted to go Division III just because of the Christian school, the coach, the teammates that I had. It was a diehard basketball town in Holland, Michigan. So, like, we're getting 3,500 people at a basketball game, a home game. I mean, you go to Division II and there's a couple hundred people maybe. You know, we had the third highest attendance in the state of Michigan when I was in college. Michigan State led all of Michigan colleges and basketball attendance. Then it was University of Michigan. Then it was Little Hope College. It's just like you walked around that town, it was like you were a celebrity. So, and it reminded me a lot of like a bigger, better version of high school, because we were just a really good high school team. We had a ton of people that came to our games there. So that may have been some regret if I didn't go overseas, but going overseas, trying to work my way up the professional ranks over there, and even though I could have played longer and would have liked to, and was getting better every single year, and it would have been exciting to see, like, how good do I get? Because every year I was just becoming a better player, smarter. My body was starting to develop. I was starting to get, you know, just like a little more of that, like, man strength, as I was getting into those mid-20s, you know. But also, like, you're playing higher caliber athletes, and you realize, like, you're for the most part around where your ceiling is, you know. Like, I remember playing against Chris Copeland the year before he played for the Knicks, just being like, okay, this dude is not in my category, right? I remember playing against the point guard for the German national team, and he was maybe a little bit longer, maybe like 6'4". And, like, even though he wasn't like a great shooter, I was like, this dude is just a different caliber of human, right? As far as his strength, his quickness, his speed, how he was able to do certain things on the court. I was like, I'm working hard, man. But my body doesn't do what his body does, right? Even though we're essentially like the same body, if that makes sense. I remember playing in the IBL and getting lit up by former NBA player Lamon Murray. And I'm just like, that dude's retired and he's probably like really out of shape, and I'm just getting cooked. Different level of player, right? And so for me overseas, I felt very much like, from a potential standpoint, satisfied with the effort that I gave in, the result that I got back, and having a good feel for, like, all right, well, I didn't play Division I in college, but I played against a bunch of Division I guys over here and I did my thing. So there was like some closure there. But in college, we were ranked like third in the country my junior year, and we lost in the Sweet 16. And we had a really bad first half. We had some guys that just didn't play their usual game, and we lost by like 6. And I think that team ended up losing real close in like the national championship game. So, like, we were right there on the cusp of being the best team in the country or having a chance to go to a Final Four or national championship. And that's the thing about March Madness, is it's one game and done. You don't get a second chance, which makes it really, really hard. And so we lost my junior year. That was the best team I played on for those 4 years of college. And, like, that's still, every time March comes around, especially, I just think about, like, man, like, that hurts. When I went to play in college out of high school and I committed to go to Hope, you know, I made kind of a little almost like a deal with myself. And I was like, you know, if I'm going to go Division III, because I, my whole time, by my senior year, I was like, I'm not going Division III. I'm going Division I or Division II. And I was like, you know, if I go Division III, I want to be, you know, regarded as the best or one of the best players to ever play at Hope College. That was my goal. And I was like, well, you're going to do, you want to be regarded as the best, you got to win. And a team has never won a national championship at Hope, but they'd had a couple runner-ups, a couple Final Fours. And I was like, I got to get back to that at least. So losing the Sweet 16 with a team that was more than capable of doing everything that it needed to do. I think there were four guys total on that team that played overseas. I mean, you think about that from a one Division III team at different points in time is insane. That's how good our team was. You don't have a whole lot of Division III teams where four guys from that roster are going to play in Europe, but that's what we had. And then my senior year comes around and we lose by 3 points in the Elite Eight. And that one hurts because I think I was like 1 for 8 or 1 for 9 in the first half. Just played like dog doo-doo in that first half. And come roaring back, I think I had 23 points in the second half. I just played my absolute tail off, played my heart out. We lose by 3, down to the wire game. And I still get nightmares from that game because, you know, you're so close. And you invest so much and you have this dream of doing something, you know, Elite Eight, one, a couple points away, and we make it to the Final Four. We're making history. Right. And so to lose that game, and I think that game, the team we lost to also lost by a few in the national championship game. And the next year they won it all. So like, we're right there both times. And that's March Madness. That's what, when you watch, for the most part, there's not always a team like UConn that's that dominant, a team like South Carolina on the women's side that's that dominant. A lot of times, there might be 5-6 teams in the NCAA tournament. You're like, they could all legitimately win the whole thing, right? And that's the way it usually is. And that's the boat we were in. Is we were in the majority of the boat, right? A team that was good enough to win it on any given day, but not so good that, you know, you can't be beat. And so when I have dreams of playing basketball, I dream of playing college basketball and trying to come through and instead of losing in that game. And so it was a little closure in being able to continue my career and go play overseas, which was awesome. But at the same time, my message when I share a little bit of this story at times is, if you're a really good player or you really want to be like the guy on your team, you want to feel the way I feel, if that makes sense. You want the responsibility. Like I wanted the responsibility that if we lost, for the most part, like it was going to be on me. Like, and I know that's one person doesn't win a game. One person doesn't lose a game. But I wanted to be, you know, if you're going to be the best player, you're going to get the most credit, but you're also going to get the most critiques, right? And rightly so. That's the way that it should be, right? If you're the captain of the ship, you're going down with the ship. So it was a responsibility that, you know, you want, I think. You know, you don't want to be the best player and you win and be like, hey, I want all the credit, and then you lose and be like, ah, you know, we just... So for me, my senior year was not playing well that first half and playing unbelievably some of the best basketball I played in my life in the second half, but it wasn't enough to counteract how bad I played in the first half. You know, so the game almost kind of evened out, but it was just wasn't enough against a really good Wash U was the team we lost to. Fantastic team, great defense, great ball screen defense. We flipped our offense completely and just ran a bunch of high ball screens for myself a lot. And, you know, they played really good ball screen defense and were a worthy, you know, opponent, a worthy champion. But my thing is to players who say, you know, Steve, you shouldn't blame yourself. You shouldn't blame yourself. And yes and no. I think if you really want to be good, you got to be willing to take the blame when you lose, to want that responsibility when you lose, to be able to lose and be able to be like, yeah, that's on me. And that's how I feel about, you know, my senior year in particular, where it was more my, when we made our run, it was more me. And then our guys were playing roles. Whereas my junior year was very much balanced. We had like six guys that averaged between like 9 and 13 a game. So thank you for listening. If you're still listening, this is like a little therapy session for things I think about all the time, but I actually just putting them out into the universe here. So we got a lot going on with Coach's Edge. Coach, this is a busy, busy time of year. April, we're scheduling all of our summer camps. We will be like fully booked for the summer, probably by the end of this week. We are promoting our spring basketball clinics. We're getting ready to relaunch coachesedge.coach. Each week I'm putting up new videos. We've taken down a bunch of shorter clip videos within the coachesedge.coach membership. So we have like, when I originally designed it, I was like, hey, we want quick. So like, here's a walk-in crossover. Here's a walk-in between legs. And I would explain like a really, like a quick teaching point and then demonstrate it. And that'd be the video. My goal was like between a 30 and 60 second video on a ton of different topics. And, but after talking to some of our members and trying to figure out, you know, how we can do a better job of making, you know, the website smooth, we decided fewer videos, but a little bit longer. So like, you don't have to click and you don't have to bounce around throughout the website, or if you're using it on your phone as much. And you can be like, all right, this mini video is 3.5 minutes long. And instead it's me breaking down like the three phases of driving with a walk-in move and the footwork and some of the teaching points, and then breaking through a couple different moves down all in that same video. So that's what we've done with first step. That's what we've done with walk-ins. That's what we've done with speedball handling. We're doing some of that with shooting. We redid the four phases of form shooting video. That's already up on the site. So if you're looking for the player development aspect of what we're trying to do, what you're trying to do with your players this offseason, now is a great time to jump into coachesedge.coach, because we have a lot of new resources there, as well as hundreds of videos in many different areas as well. So thank you for listening to my little bit of a take on March Madness. Thank you for you know, your time listening to my little therapy session. And if there's anything I can do for you with coachesedge.coach, please feel free to reach out, contact@kramerbasketball.com. Get after today.